you have backups and not have them be vulnerable to the things like CryptoLocker and ransomware? And I think this is a really big deal because every one of you has data that you care about, whether you're a business or you're a home user that has photographs of your family that you don't want to lose. Now, I'm going to try and talk you through all the pieces of this so that you can really think it out and then give you some solutions about how you might address this on your own and what the cost profile for such a thing like that is. So let's first start off with a little bit of an example of some ransomware and what it can do. I'll give you two examples. One is the some of the more advanced variants of CryptoLocker right now. They will not only encrypt the data that is locally stored on your computer that your user account has access to, but it will reach out into your network drives, and of course, anything that is what is considered to be locally attached storage. So that could be USB flash drives. It could be an externally attached USB hard drive. Yeah, all of that. So if you're using a locally attached USB hard drive as your backups destination, that's quite problematic. Because if the whole risk mitigation strategy, complete fallback. I mean, clearly your primary risk mitigation strategy for ransomware is to just be able to get rid of it and block it through appropriate security protocols. But your disaster recovery methodology, if bad doo-doo really hits the fan and you get some ransomware that ends up encrypting your hard drive and the data on it that you care, because you don't want to be one of those people that ends up forking out a bunch of money to some bad guys, and then, well, do you know, have they actually tampered with your data anyways? So, short of, you should have, first of all, you should have the security things in place to make sure that you're not going to get ransomware. But if it does happen, then you want to make sure that your backups are effective and that they're not vulnerable to getting whacked by the ransomware itself. So, if all the backups that you have are on a locally attached USB hard drive, even if you're maintaining versions, well, it doesn't matter because the ransomware will go through and encrypt all of those files, all of your versions. And the latest variants of these awful, evil ransomware applications is that they will reach out across the network to UNC paths, browsed path locations, and certainly mapped drive letters, and also encrypt any data that you actually have access to with your account. So a lot of this has to do with credentials because realize that the ransomware is propagating throughout the network utilizing your credentials. So now, if you happen to be an incredibly foolish individual and you're logged on to your computer as a domain admin account, then your computer and your browsing on that computer has the ability to destroy your entire business network. So if you're doing that, please go to the bathroom, look yourself in the mirror, and slap yourself right now because you shouldn't have been doing that for the last 15 years. It's completely unacceptable. Stop doing that today. Now, if you are a home user and you are an administrator account on your PC, I've said it about 100,000 times. Please don't do that. That's a recipe for disaster. You're basically making it so that any sort of nasty thing that gets on your computer has all of the capabilities in terms of credentials to wreak all kinds of havoc. So, part of your risk mitigation strategy here you have to realize is about segmentation of credentials. Now, let's talk about another type of ransomware that just came out. It's called Petya, and it's actually something that overwrites the master boot record and it displays what kind of looks like a blue screen of death, except it's a red skull and crossbones sort of thing. And I think it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, it's horrible, obviously, but it's pretty ridiculous because the entire point of the crypto ransomware previously has been to, make your computer accessible to you. Like, you could log on to it and you could get to the internet, but your data was encrypted, and then they would display messages to you that would say, if you ever want to see your files again, then, fork over some cash. Well, in this case, they're completely busting your computer. They're actually replacing the master boot record. So, unless you happen to have another computer that you can then, browse the internet with, then how are you ever supposed to pay the ransomware? So I think it's somewhat foolish how they've decided to do this, although it is attention getting. Now, that being said, if you have Windows 8 or above, and that computer of yours was built from scratch with those operating systems in place rather than doing an in-place upgrade to Windows 8 or Windows 10, then you would already have UEFI boot, I would presume. Now, realize I said that Petya was a master boot record replacing crypto ransomware. So if you have UEFI boot, you don't have a master boot record now, do you? So, in the shows where I talked about Windows 10 upgrades, I talked quite a lot about this whole thing that was the advantage of UEFI boot. Now, if you had an older OS and you had the opportunity to do in-place upgrade to Windows 10, that's great. Please do that because then that locks in your licensing. So now that computer is perpetually licensed then for Windows 10, even if it dies and you have to rebuild it from scratch. But realizing that unless you started from Windows 8 with UEFI boot already on, then you don't have UEFI boot. If you came from Windows 7 or below and went to Windows 10, you don't have UEFI boot. So if you have done the in-place upgrade and then you're rather courageous or you're an IT person, then go ahead and rebuild from scratch. But unless you have a real, solid understanding of how to rebuild computers from scratch, including changing the BIOS mode to UEFI boot, then don't do that. And if you do want that extra layer of security, then get some help. And that's certainly something that me and my staff at Quality Plus Consulting can help you with. Now, back to Petya. How is it getting to your computer? It's rather interesting. I've been talking to some tax accountants lately, and they've been telling me that their customers are sending them a lot of data through Dropbox. Well, sure enough, Petya's main attack infection vector is Dropbox. And for those of you that are all hepped up about using Dropbox, you need to realize that Dropbox has no advanced persistent threat scanning capabilities whatsoever. They don't have anything to be checking the files that are placed on their systems for malware, viruses, whatever. And unless they're sandboxing technology like APT blocking technology, that whole signature-based detection strategy isn't going to work anyways. Now, I mean, so you just got to understand that Dropbox doesn't have any security at all. So if you think that that's a good option to use Dropbox, you may want to reconsider alternate storage methodologies like OneDrive or SharePoint or Office 365 components or something like SpiderOak. And if you're going to have Office 365 and you want to have that APT sandboxing capability and the malware detection and the virus detection all right there as it's sitting in your tenant, so before it ever gets to your computer, then you're going to have Cloud App Security and have it properly programmed. Now, Cloud App Security is not very expensive, and if you're interested in such things, do give me a call or send me an email. I'd be more than happy to talk to you about that. So now let's get to this whole topic of how do we have a destination for our backups that is not going to be whacked by the crypto ransomware? Well, there are things called network attached storage devices that can be used. However, they have to be implemented correctly, or all that you've done is shifted You've basically given yourself a false sense of security. So as an example of that, I talked about the whole permissions thing before. Now, if you can be on your computer logged in as your account with your credentials and you can access that NAS, so can the crypto ransomware when it's running under your credentials. So that doesn't do any good. So you need to actually have a setup for the NAS and for your backups that's using alternate credentials on a schedulized basis, and that your day-to-day user account that you browse the internet with and do email with has no access to the NAS. So, otherwise, what good have you done? Well, you may be thinking, oh, well, I just put my stuff in iCloud, or I've got my Google Drive. And, or even let's just talk about OneDrive, okay? Because a lot of my clients use OneDrive. I certainly like it. But OneDrive is not a is not a complete substitute for backups. I mean, it can be okay, but it's not a complete 100% substitute for backups. If you only ever had one version of your data because you didn't need to go anal retentive on your data backups, then maybe OneDrive's okay. But you got to realize that if you get crypto ransomware and the crypto ransomware encrypts your entire OneDrive folder, well, OneDrive as a sync engine is pretty intelligent and it will just grab all that stuff and replicate it. So you now, in your cloud storage, have replicated crypto files. Your files are there, sure, but they're encrypted. So then you had better hope that you know how to restore your files that were stored in OneDrive from yesterday's version and that you have that capability. Now, if you have something like Cloud App Security and it's correctly programmed, then as those files are being attempted to be replicated to the server-side component, Cloud App Security will grab that and say, "Oh, no, you don't." No, you don't. That doesn't seem quite right. So, just out of the gate, none of these technologies, especially free things like Dropbox or Google Drive, none of the free stuff has anywhere remotely close to adequate security in it. And you have to realize that. And so if it doesn't have adequate security, that means it also doesn't have adequate detection of bad things and blocking of bad things, and then therefore, it's probably not by itself going to be sufficient for you to be preventing your data files be lost because of some crypto ransomware. So if you're using Google Drive and it's synchronizing with your device, as opposed to you exclusively accessing it through a web browser like Chrome, then whatever that crypto ransomware has access to, it can encrypt it, and your cloud sync engine, like iCloud as an example, will literally replicate up the encrypted files, overwriting and removing. It perceives it as these are new files, and whatever your old files were, well, they're gone. So that change is going to be full mirror mode replicated to your cloud storage. So, in terms of mitigating the risk of loss of all of your data due to crypto ransomware, you need to think about this in terms of saying, I have to have a backup system that not only gives me daily data backups with version control. So, like maybe you want the last 14 days of versions of your full data backup sets. And then you also need to have full system images of your computer so that you can restore it from an image in case the crypto ransomware does do its bad thing. Because I've seen circumstances where the crypto ransomware will get on the computer, the host-based security product will stop it in a very short order, but the crypto ransomware will have already whacked the computer, meaning it's not quite right anymore. And data files will have most definitely been encrypted, but the host-based security product will detect it and stop it from encrypting the network. So what this means is Let's say you had your version control for your data backups. That's great. But now what are you going to do about broken computer? Are you going to rebuild it from scratch? Because that certainly is an option. But in terms of workstation licensing, if you were to get a single license for a Acronis workstation, which is about $100, then you can actually have that scheduled to write to your NAS. Now, if you go onto Acronis's website and you say, "Well, Felicia, what are you talking about? It's not $100." Well, are you looking at the advanced version? Because there are limitations in the what they call the home user personal line, and those limitations are all restricted to writing to locally attached storage, which I've already said you can't use. You need to have detached storage, meaning all your data backups need to be going to a NAS, and that NAS needs to have accounts set up on it that mirror hidden accounts that are on your workstation, that those hidden accounts on your workstation are being utilized in order to run the data backup. So in that way, as you are logged on to your workstation, you don't have any access to the NAS, but the automated backup jobs in the, that are going to run overnight, or maybe they run on Sundays, whatever the schedule is that you define, the account that is utilized to run those scheduled backups in an automated way does have the ability to write to the NAS, to manage files on the NAS, and to do that version control. Now, in terms of setting up one of these NASs properly, I'll be very blunt. I have a 100-step checklist that I go through in order to set up that NAS properly. I'm not saying that they're not easy to use devices. Yes, they are designed to be convenient and easy to use. However, as I think you all know by now, there is a very strong, distinct difference between a device that has the appearance of working versus a device that you know is secured. Two totally different animals. So if your objective is just, "Well, no, I'm just going to get it up and running," okay, go ahead, go for it. Wing it, try to do it on your own. But if your goal is to make sure that the device is secured against a variety, a spectrum of attacks, because your whole point to me of having a backup device like a NAS is so that you can have the confidentiality, the integrity, and the availability of your data, because that's what this is all about, is it's the whole CIA algorithm, or the acronym. And in fact, that's a good way for you to remember it, is confidentiality, meaning it's you and only you and authorized parties that can access that. Integrity, meaning no unauthorized changes have happened to that data, meaning the bad guys and the malware and so forth wasn't able to get at it, nor any sort of remote attackers, nor anyone who maybe surreptitiously gains inappropriate access to your trusted network via whatever means. And then availability, meaning that when you need that data, it is there. Now, by the way, this whole CIA algorithm or acronym here is all about, it's the same sort of strategy you need to use for your PC, or your laptop, or even your tablet or your phone, right? All of this is about, these things are tools that you need to maintain your confidentiality, maintain the integrity of the data that you have, that you care about. And you want them to be available. So we don't have security just to have it, just because. No, we have security because we want our stuff, our tools, to be available to us when we want to use them. So the NASs need to be set up properly. Now, there's another benefit of a NAS, which is you could actually back up all of the computers in your house to that NAS. And me being the security spaz that I am, I would even go so far as to set up some additional risk mitigation strategies that have to do with different folders with different permission structures so that the backup account on computer A is different than the backup account that's on computer B. So if something does actually happen that is very undesirable on computer B, then that account cannot be utilized in order to attack computer A. I hope that makes sense. So, NASs are great, and you should totally get one, but you should also get some help in getting them set up. And how much do these things cost? Well, if you go over to Best Buy or some store like that, what you'll see is some products like, well, you'll see things that are really designed for consumer convenience sort of thing, like Western Digital makes some products, and I think Seagate makes some products. Frankly, I wouldn't buy any of those things because all of those things are based upon utilizing their software for backups and that. I mean, the whole thing is all about like, one touch backup. They're not designed to be secured. So I would strongly suggest you take a look at a couple websites out there. One is called Synology, Synology, Synology. The other one's called IOSafe. Now, IOSafe happens to be a virtually bomb-proof, disaster-proof chassis for a Synology NAS. So in the context that you wanted to have something that would probably make it through a tornado, but most definitely make it through a fire or a flood, and can actually be bolted to the floor in a secured room, meaning it's mitigating the risk of loss due to theft, then in that context, you might want an IOSafe. And you might say, well, gee, why don't I just go with the cloud backups because they seem to be cheaper? Well, do you actually understand who has access to your data if you do these cloud backups? Do you understand what your recovery time changes to? Because if you're, let's say your download connection is 45 meg, which is pretty generous, still the fact remains you might have a terabyte of data. Or what if you've got 100 gigs of data, which is only a tenth of a terabyte? The fact remains, it's going to take you a whole heaping lot of time to re-download your data if your strategy was to use cloud backup as your primary backup system. And that also assumes that it hasn't been compromised or broken in transit or corrupted in transit and that. I don't have a problem with certain cloud options as a secondary backup methodology. But rarely is it the case that that cloud backup option helps you achieve your recovery time objective. If it is going to take 20 hours to download the data before you can even start the recovery option, then I think you have a problem. What you really need to do is look at how much time is going to transpire before I can start my recovery option. Now, granted, if what we're talking about is something that is a very small amount of data that you need to recover, then fine, your cloud recovery time is probably going to be just fine because maybe you're only downloading 100 megs worth of stuff. Like, oh, crud, I deleted that file and it was backed up last night and I need to recover a copy of that file. Okay, that's great. Sure, your cloud backup's going to be fine for that. But what your cloud backup is not going to be great for as a primary recovery mechanism is that large data. And most people that I work with, they might have anywhere between 10 and 50 gigs of personal data, photos of their family, their email, their tax returns, these sorts of things. So if your average everyday person has got 10 to 50 gigs of data, how long is it going to take to download that in case of a recovery situation? And it's just something that you have to think about. Maybe you're perfectly fine waiting 20 hours for that to download. I don't know. And then the question is that file transfer mechanism going to result in files that did not get corrupted in that transmission? So it's things for you to think about, and the main purpose here is for you to be making informed decisions. So let's go over what I would really suggest you do. Because sometimes I like to just give you a cookbook and you say, well, Felicia, what in the world do I do? Okay. Well, if you are a complete do-it-yourselfer, then go get a Synology NAS or get an IOSafe NAS. Go buy a license for Acronis Workstation And you can set up a Cronus to where it'll make a full system image of your workstation, say once a month or every 2 weeks or maybe even every week, and with version control and data retention cleanup rules. Then, on a daily basis, you can have a separate job where you can also use a Cronus to back up your data files. So, just your data files. You can have two different types of backups. And then write that to the NAS. But that needs to be done using a separate account, an account that's completely separate from your regular account, which means you're going to need to create a separate administrator account for that. And then that account's going to have to be set up properly on the NAS. But remember, with the NAS, I said that I go through a 100-step checklist to make sure that that NAS is set up properly. So if you've got a lot of time on your hands and you just want to putz with that thing and, hope that you're going to get it right and you don't have the budget to hire me, that's fine. Go for it. I mean, I'd be happy that you'd have some backups that would be more effective than just simply some locally attached USB hard drive that is most likely going to be whacked in a ransomware situation. So at least you'd have backups that would be on a separatized device like the NAS. But in the case where you want to make sure that it is set up correctly because you really, really care about your data, then do give me a call or send me an email or use the contact form on the website. So, the ransomware risk mitigation, your best bet with that is two, well, threefold. One, definitely don't browse the internet as an administrator account, please. Two, get a proper host-based security product such as Trend's Worry-Free Business Security Services Edition product, or their CompleteCare product. In fact, earlier this week, they just came out with some additional enhanced ransomware protection. And if you happen to be using something like Office 365, then you should have Cloud App Security. But the final layer, the final piece of the puzzle, which I'll be very frank, is the most expensive, but also one of the most effective pieces of this puzzle, is to have a perimeter security appliance that has the capability to sandbox files as they are coming in. There is no perimeter security appliance on the market manufactured today by any manufacturer that out of the box comes configured in order to do those things. Furthermore, there's no host-based security product that comes configured out of the box to do the appropriate level of security pieces. So you need help. Either you just have an inordinate amount of time on your hands to just figure this stuff out on your own, or you get help from somebody. And that's what we do here at Quality Plus Consulting, is sit around and help folks like you all the time, and we enjoy it. We specialize in securing things and making sure that you don't get breached. So that's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it, and as always, I do look forward to your comments and questions. So you can email or call or use the contact form on the website. Thanks.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside. Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe,